Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Saturday, November 29th, 2025 reading of the Jefferson County Publications. My name is Donna Gill. Today, we will be reading from the following main articles. From the Arvada Press. Arvada first responders warn against e-bike, e-scooter misuse by Riley Dunn. Arvada Record Stores Gear Up for Record Store Day Black Friday by Riley Dunn. Tis the Season 2025 Arvada Holiday Events Guide by Riley Dunn. From the Canyon Courier. Evergreen Fire Rescue to Add 3 Paid Firefighters by Jane Reuter. Morrison Spending on Roads, Water in 2026 by Jane Reuter. Christmas in Conifer Culminates in Annual Parade by Jane Reuter. From the Jeffco Transcript. Mount Air Christian Church Food Bank Brings Community Together by Lillian Fuglay. From the Arvada Press. Arvada first responders warn against e-bike, e-scooter misuse. Authorities say there's been a rise in infractions, crashings involving unique vehicles, by Riley Dunn. Today's e-bike and e-scooters don't quite resemble the Razor scooters of yore. Faster, less regulated, and more difficult to quantify under the law. Arvada has seen a spike in crashes and other incidences involving unique vehicles, as the Arvada Police Department calls them, according to APD Public Information Officer Chase Amos. APD is working on getting the word out about the legality of these vehicles, particularly where and when they can be operated within the city. APD Commander Jason Amon said there have been about 30 tickets since it started enforcing the city's laws around such vehicles in late summer. The department spent the earlier part of the summer working on education and outreach, issued for improper operation of unique vehicles, and a slew of crashes, some of which have been serious and or fatal. We've been seeing this as an increasing problem in Arvada, particularly with juveniles on vehicles and bikes they're not supposed to be on, riding in places where they're not supposed to be, Amos said. A lot of these incidences result in crashes and pretty serious injuries for some of the involved juveniles and bikes. Arvada's municipal code separates e-bikes into 3 categories. Class 1 requires pedaling and can reach a top speed of 20 miles per hour. Class 2 does not require pedaling and can also reach a top speed of 20 miles per hour. Class 1 and Class 2 e-bikes are allowed on sidewalks, roads, trails, and parks, though the speed limit in trails and parks is 15 miles per hour. Class 3 can go up to 28 miles per hour, and a rider must be 16 years old to be able to legally operate such a vehicle. Classes 1 and 2 do not have any age restrictions. Class 3 e-bikes cannot be driven on sidewalks, trails, or in parks. Riders under the age of 18 must wear a helmet. Electric scooters are defined as having handlebars and weighing less than 100 pounds and being powered by an electric motor with a maximum speed of 20 miles per hour. They are allowed on roads, sidewalks, trails, and in parks and must follow rules of the road for bicycles. Low-powered scooters are smaller vehicles with engines under 4,476 watts and must be registered, insured, and driven by licensed drivers. They are not allowed on sidewalks, trails, or in parks. Riders under 18 must wear a helmet. Vehicles not allowed on Arvada's roads, parks, or trails include dirt bikes, ATVs, golf carts, and toy vehicles such as mini bikes and go-peds. If you are confused, you're not the only one, according to Arvada's assistant city attorney, Pedriac Emmerine. It's a very confusing situation for both our citizens and for our police officers out on the roadway, Emmerine said. The reason for that that this is a traffic code, which is Title 42 in the state of Colorado, is written rather broadly, doesn't have very many specifics. We have a number of different definitions when it comes to motor vehicles. Motor vehicle is what you think of as your everyday vehicle that you take to and from work that you see just driving on the roadways, Emerine continued. Then you have things that are called off-road vehicles and toy vehicles. That's kind of what we're seeing becoming problematic in our community and in fellow communities around the area. Those are things like your ATVs, your mini bikes, your dirt bikes, and all of those types of things. Emerine said that there has been confusion when folks are purchasing these vehicles that extends into how the vehicles are used on the roadway. And so the community is like, well, we didn't know that, Emerine continued. And so there's a little bit of frustration and friction and at least confusion on where you can use these types of things. Amon said that differing rules between different municipalities are also causing confusion. All of these things are legal and lawful to purchase, but not necessarily lawful to use anywhere that you might want to use them in Arvada or surrounding communities, Amon said. And then, Arvada's rules and regulations may be different, say from Wheat Ridge or Lakewood or Denver, if you will. Amon added that parents can be cited for allowing their children to break the law with unique vehicles. We have a statute within the city that also allows us to charge a parent if they're allowing their kid to violate any laws on the books in a Munich code, and I know of at least one of those who've written that was based on a crash, Amon said. Ignorance of the law is not a defense, and so as a parent, you're responsible for understanding what your kids can legally operate. Sarah Kolnick, a trauma surgeon at Lutheran Hospital, said that the increasing speed of those vehicles is causing more severe injuries. As those vehicles have gotten much faster, the injuries we're seeing are more similar to motorcycle crash. Kolnick said, we're seeing a lot of kids, teens, and young adults coming in with injuries. More information about the legality of unique vehicles in Arvada can be found at arvadaco.gov. And this article is accompanied by an image with the following caption. APD officer Jason Amon left and Arvada assistant attorney Padraic Emerine right stand next to an infographic about unique vehicles, photo by Riley Dunn. And this is a photo of two men, one in a police officer uniform, standing on the left. He's smiling at the camera. He's a white man. He is bald. And next to him is a man, a white man. He's wearing a suit and he has his arms crossed in front of him. He's smiling at the camera. He has on a goatee, dark hair, and both men look like they're in their 40s. They're standing next to an infographic, which is a poster with class 1, class 2, and class 3. Motorbikes or e-bikes and motorized vehicles and a little bit of information about them, although I can't quite read it. And they're standing in a room with windows behind them, small windows kind of up high. And there's a table with, it looks like a notebook open in front of them. There is another image which is a graphic which says unique vehicles in Arvada. If it has wheels, it has rules. Share the road, follow the code. And it has e-bikes, a picture, class 1, class 2, and class 3, and descriptions of each, electronic motorcycles and descriptions, other vehicles. Can't quite read all of the descriptions of what is underneath each one of these headers. But it says, have questions or need more information? Visit arvadaco.gov/unique vehicles, Arvada Police Department, Ralston Road. The caption says an APD graphic explaining the differing legality of certain unique vehicles, courtesy of the Arvada Police. Arvada Record Store gear up for Record Store Day, Black Friday. Electric Cherry Black and Red Shopkeepers Talk RSD Black Friday Exclusives by Riley Dunn. Exclusive releases from luminaries such as Joni Mitchell, Fleetwood Mac, Talking Heads, Prince, Warren Zevon, and King Gizzard, and The Lizard Wizard will be hitting shelves at independent record stores on November 28th for Record Store Day Black Friday, a biannual tradition that dates back to 2008. Local Arvada record shops like Electric Cherry, located at 5777 Old Wadsworth Boulevard, and Black Red, located at 6655 Wadsworth Boulevard, are gearing up for the big day, which was added to supplement the original Record Store Day, which is held in April in 2021. Electric Cherry founder and CEO Ali Skiba said that she is opening the shop early at 8 a.m., but patrons usually start lining up around midnight. To accompany the RSD vehicles, we always do massive vinyl giveaways, Skiba said. This entails a free vinyl raffle. Customers can always expect a 10% off discount on used and new vinyl records all day on Record Store Day. Lastly, we launched our limited edition vinyl mystery packs, a unique concept to the Electric Cherry that we usually sell out of immediately. We wrap them like holiday gifts, either by genre or a miscellaneous collection. Black and Red will be opening up early as well, with folks being welcomed in at 9 a.m., according to owner Derek Rolvesbacon. The shop will serve donuts and coffee for folks who get there early. This will be the shop's first Record Store Day since relocating from their previous home further north on Wadsworth. RSD Black Friday and Record Store Day are great chances to get limited edition pressings, some worth far more than the issue prices, Rolvesbacon said. We will also have some new stickers and other surprises. There's a giveaway for a record player from Victrola. Both the shops highlighted a few RSD Black Friday releases that have been getting buzz, said Rolvesbacon, mentioning Talking Heads Live on Tour, Prince's Live at Glam Slam, and Fleetwood Mac's self-titled album, all of which will get released in special pressings. Skiba said that she had a slew of releases that she's excited for and has been hearing hype around certain releases from customers. Personally, I've been raised on quite a bit of Joni Mitchell and Warren Zevon in my life, thanks to my awesome rock and roll mama, Skiba said. Joni Mitchell will be releasing her Rolling Thunder Review, which dates back to her tour with Bob Dylan in 1975, leading to her classic album, Hejira, shortly afterwards. Many of these live songs are being pressed on vinyl for the first time ever. Warren Zevon's legendary last concert happened in 2002 at the Edmonton Folk Festival, Skiba continued. This final concert, showcasing his incredible collection of music, will be available on vinyl for RSD Black Friday. We will have numerous copies of Wicked for Good, the soundtrack, on vinyl featuring alternate cover art. There's an insane amount of hype around this pressing. Record Store Day was founded in 2008 to support independent record stores. Black and Red has been participating in the tradition since the inaugural year, and Electric Cherry has gotten in on the festivities since opening its doors in 2020, though it wasn't added to the official roster of indie stores until 2022. RSD Black Friday came to fruition in 2021 to give shops an extra boost at the different time of year. In a day and age like today, where online shopping can be confusing, we need to remember that there are humans within our community that spend their precious time caring for the love of music and what this artistic nourishment means for all types of people, Skiba said. Music is a timeless, nurturing art form that brings folks together. That's the true meaning of Record Store Day, Skiba continued. It's a celebration of indie record stores across the nation and the unifying force of music as a whole. Music takes care of us in each moment of our lives, if we give it the space to. Music stores are experiences for folks who may need the reassurance of safety in their community, a space to truly express themselves, or just a shower of joy in their daily lives. A full list of RSD Black Friday releases can be found at recordstoreday.com. And this article is accompanied by a photo with the following caption: Electric Cherry has some Record Store Day Black Friday festivities planned. Courtesy photo. And this is a photo of the inside of the store. And there's lots of bright colors. You can see the albums in different containers on tables and several albums on the walls. You can't really tell who any of them are. But there's a beautiful, colorful star covering one of the windows. I can't tell if it's a stained glass window or a covering of some sort. And there's a little carpet on the ground. There's a little curtain that covers up what looks like a mirror, and lots of colorful, there's some, it looks like gift items that are not albums. I see a crescent moon and some other container of something. So lots of different things. There's some music motifs on the wall. Looks bright and inviting. Tis the season, 2025 Arvada Holiday Gifts Guide, Holiday Events Guide. Three Lightning, Eggnog and Cider Competition, and More Return by Riley Dunn. The holidays are right around the corner, and Old Town Arvada is getting ready for its full slate of festivities. Annual favorites like the Old Town Arvada tree lighting, the eggnog and cider competition, and Saturdays with Santa are all coming back this winter. Also returning is Old Town Holiday Bingo, which will allow participants who get bingo to enter a raffle for an Old Town gift card. An elf hunt also coming to town, with youngsters being invited to find hidden water tower elves around town. Arvada really comes alive during the holidays. Visit Arvada director Jean Gordon said, "I'm excited for our local businesses decked out for the season and all of the memorable experiences that make this community shine. We have great places to eat, incredible local retailers, and festive experiences that make celebrating here feel truly special. Here are some of the events Old Town is gearing up to host this holiday season. Old Town Arvada Tree Lighting, November 29th. Festivities from 2 to 8 p.m., tree lighting at 6 p.m. The Old Town Tree Lighting will feature a pop-up makers market with local vendors and bars. Brass Band Gorilla Fanfare will kick off a festive march at 5 p.m., starting in front of the Bluegrass. The tree lighting will take place at 6 p.m. and be accompanied by musical group B Flatirons as the pop-up market and festivities continue until 8 p.m. Skating in the Square, November 26th to January 4th, Monday through Wednesday, 4 to 7 p.m., Thursday to Friday, 4 to 8 p.m., and Saturday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., with special hours on certain holidays. The annual synthetic ice rink is back in Old Town Square, with skate rentals available for adults and kiddos. The rink will be closed on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, and will have special holiday hours on certain days, which can be found at oldtownarvada.org. /holidays-2025. 10th Annual Eggnog and Cider Competition, Legnaipe, December 8th, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. The local favorite Eggnog and Cider Competition is back on December 8th, featuring mainstays like Bluegrass Flights Wine Cafe, Hunter Bay Coffee Roasters, and La Dolce Vita Coffee Shop, all of which won superlative honors last year. Cochino Taco is back for its second year, and Method and Muse Spirits will make its competition debut. As of press time, only 150 tickets remain to the event, according to Old Town Arvada Business Improvement District Events Director Stephanie Paul. "Once we sell out, we're completely sold out," Paul said. Tickets can be purchased at oldtownarvada.org. There will be free carriage rides during the event. Holiday Pop-Up Market Saturdays with Santa, December 6th, 13th, and 20th. Market, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Santa, 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. The holiday pop-up market and Saturdays with Santa are returning this year, with Santa, the Grinch, and possibly a fairy coming to take photos with local youngsters, according to Paul. She said the vendor list for the pop-up market is not finalized yet, but local businesses will be represented. We are prioritizing local Arvadans businesses and small businesses during the holiday season, Paul said. Info on all Old Town holiday events can be found at oldtownarvada.org. That's O-L-D-E, townarvada.org. And this is accompanied by a photo with the following caption. Old Town is getting ready for the holiday season. And this is a picture of a Christmas tree. And you can see a few three ice skaters. And they're circling around the Christmas tree. And there's a fence around the Christmas tree. And it looks like decorations on the ground. And in front of the Christmas tree behind the Christmas tree is a brick building. And it looks like there's snow on top of the brick building. This is a rather large Christmas tree, probably 30 feet high, maybe 20 feet. And there are bright red balls of Christmas lights on the tree. It's kind of an overcast day. And you can see there are a couple of street lights in the distance. The sign on the brick store, or on the brick building, I can't tell what it says, but it looks like a brown sign with some sort of writing. From the Canyon Courier, Evergreen Fire Rescue to add 3 paid firefighters. Faster response time shows more paid staff will improve service. By Jane Reuter. Evergreen Fire Rescue will hire another 3 paid firefighters in 2026 to staff Station 1 in downtown Evergreen. While the chief had originally planned to wait and hire additional paid firefighters with the reconstruction of Station 1, the improved response time since EFR hired its first 6 firefighters show that doing so sooner is in the public's best interest. The Station 2 hires were such a success and have really made a difference, EFR Chief Mike Weege said. Having career firefighters at Station 1 is just going to provide a better service to the community, so we shouldn't put it off. The EFR board won't formally approve its budget until next month, but its members gave Weege the nod to hire 3 more firefighters so he can work those costs into the 2026 budget. He expects to have the new hires on board by April 2026. EFR hired its first 6 paid firefighters to staff Station 2 on Bergen Parkway in October of 2024. Since then, turnout times have decreased by almost 10 minutes. Turnout time is the period from when a fire department gets an emergency notification to when the responding vehicle leaves the station. New model for faster response. The new model relies on a combination of paid and volunteer staff. 2 of the current 6 paid firefighters are always on call at Station 2. While some volunteers stay at the station with the paid staff, others respond from their homes. The crew at Station 2 can get into fire engines and out the door quickly. Meanwhile, neighborhood volunteers go directly to the incident scene from their home or other location and meet the fire truck there. Plans call for tearing down the outdated Station 1 near the Evergreen Spillway and building a combined Station 1 and 4 and the former Evergreen Mountain Market property. That will merge fire and medical services under one roof, as it is at Station 2. That likely will take years to create designs, hire contractors, and secure funding for the building. Rather than wait 3 to 4 years at best, we can hire firefighters now and start that process at the old station, he said. It just goes back to providing a better service. Weege said EFR will use its own funds to pay the new hires, just as it did for the first 6. The agency had planned to pay the initial cost for the paid staff with $806,000 in property tax reimbursements from the state. we were able to utilize a very modest increase in revenue, capped at 5.25% by the state of Colorado, to maintain the first six hires and hire three more in 2026, he said. We did not need to rely on the $806,000 and were able to keep that in reserves. Our five-year forecast shows we will be able to maintain these nine firefighters. EFR also plans to remodel its Station 2 starting in early 2026, so more firefighters can live there and continue or improve the time it takes to reach an emergency scene. EFR responded to nearly 4,000 calls in 2024, up from 3,000 in 2023, a change it attributes to ES CARES program, population growth, aging demographic, and residential fire alarm systems. This article is accompanied by a photo with the following caption: Evergreen Fire Rescue welcomed its first six paid firefighters above at Station 2 on Bergen Parkway in October of 2025. It will hire three more in spring of 2026 to staff Station 1 in downtown Evergreen. And this is a photo of six men, age range late 20s to late 40s, early 50s. They're all wearing blue, and they all have on a badge, or at least an insignia on their jacket or t-shirt that they're wearing. They are all white men. And all of them have mustaches, and they're all smiling at the camera. And three of them are wearing hats that look like, I can't tell what they are, but they look the same. So assumption is that they are from the EFR. And one of them has, actually two of them have on, it looks like some sort of walkie-talkie. They're standing in front of a building with brick or some sort of stone pillars and brown doors with windows. It looks like maybe it's the front of the firehouse. Morrison's spending on roads, water in 2026. Projects to replace, upgrade aging infrastructure needed to serve Red Rocks Ranch development, by Jane Reuter. Morrison is next in line for a huge increase in projects and spending on them. Most will be critical but invisible upgrades for its residents, but some will improve their daily driving and walking experiences in the town. The town has budgeted $12.4 million for capital projects in the coming year, the vast majority of that from its utility fund to pay for water and sewer system upgrades. That's a five-fold increase in utility fund expenditures from 2025 and a nearly 50% increase in general fund expenditures. It will definitely be the year of infrastructure, said town manager Mallory Nassau. From looking at things, I think the last major infrastructure project the town did was replacing the South Park Bridge in 2018. We got through a lot of intergovernmental issues last year with the Mount Carbon Metropolitan District. Next year, we'll be addressing some of the infrastructure that have been on the back burner. Many of the changes planned in 2026 are needed because the infrastructure is old and growth in unincorporated Red Rocks Ranch, which gets its water and sewer from Morrison, is putting new demands on those old systems. The town has and will continue to share some of its cost with the Mount Carbon Metropolitan District, which is responsible for providing infrastructure to Red Rocks Ranch on several projects. Morrison also needs to replace and repair aging water pipes and damaged streets within the town limits. While all the projects are costly, revenue projections for 2026 that include $2.3 million in sales tax, the town's largest revenue source, will still add to a balanced budget. General fund projects. The remaining $1.85 million in general fund capital projects will include a new walkway along Highway 8. The walkway now ends at the post office and would extend south toward Morrison's Natural History Museum and the east entrance to Mount Falcon. While board members debated removing that item from the 2026 budget, they concluded it was time. For 30 years, we've been pushing it down the road, said Trustee Adam Way. The public has spoken on that. It will also improve the museum grounds, including paving the parking lot and setting up a stop for the West Track shuttle. The shuttle will stop at the museum and downtown Morrison, along with other stops along Highway 93 and in Golden. The town plans to spend $150,000 on planning for the 16 acres east of the Ridgeback it will soon own. In its annexation of the former Bandimere site, new owners Copart agreed to give the town the land. That property won't be conveyed until Copart has approved the plan, which was recently submitted to the town. Our hope is that as soon as the land is conveyed to us, we'll be able to hit the ground running with a plan and start seeing all of that potential, Nassau said. It's a great area to develop without impacting downtown Morrison. Morrison has designated $1 million for street improvements and a pavement management plan. While Nassau said it may take some time for residents to see actual changes in the roads, which many complain are ridden with potholes, the process is beginning. We'll start with a pavement management plan and have an engineering firm give a schedule of what makes the most sense and where to start, she said. With the remaining money, we'll do some of the triage. Those won't be complete repaves, but hopefully a last go at Band-Aids before we start doing the actual work. We anticipate that it will happen at the end of 2026, definitely in 2027. That work is already budgeted in a 5-year capital improvement plan that the board also approved, which includes $3.5 million in street improvements. Back to the bridge. While the South Park Bridge was replaced in 2018, it needs to be restructured yet again. The town closed it in July 2025 after the Colorado Department of Transportation identified the bridge as a high-priority repair during an annual bridge inspection, according to town manager Mallory Nassau. The town has earmarked $100,000 for planning its replacement in 2026 and $1.1 million for its reconstruction in 2027. Next year's plans also call for adding a wayfinding system to ease the visitors' experience exploring Morrison. We hear from people that there's not enough signage about paid parking, and we'd like to better connect people to the museum, Nassau said. So we're coming up with the tools visitors can use. We hope it will help people understand where they have to pay, as well as where there are free lots. Utility fund projects. Just less than $10.6 million is budgeted for capital projects through the utility fund in 2026. While Nassau said the town's system is old, the work is triggered in large part by development in Red Rocks Ranch east of C-470. The bulk of what you'll see for the next year is our obligation for the infrastructure Mount Carbon will really be moving on, she said. Red Rocks Ranch is not part of incorporated Morrison, but the small town of less than 400 residents is the source of water and wastewater for the community. This article is accompanied by a photo with the following caption. Morrison plans a host of improvements to its infrastructure, including repaving streets. In 2026, it's a budgeted $1 million for street improvements and a pavement management plan. It also approved another $3.5 million in street improvements over the next 5 years. And this is a picture of a road. It looks like in a town. And you can see there are some storefronts, some cars, a few trucks. The view is like the person is standing in the road taking the photo. You can see Red Rocks Grill. There is an upholstery store. There's a American flag, a couple signs sticking out. There are about four cars that you can see, a few parked, a few driving. It's a overcast day with some puffy clouds, green trees in the background. You can see stoplights. It looks like the truck in the middle of the road is stopped, and maybe it's dropping off some things because it looks like there's a keg just outside of the truck. There are, you can see the street. There are some cracks in the street. And you can see the lines on the pavement showing the drivers to turn left. And the double yellow lines. There's also a crosswalk. And you can see one person in the distance. Christmas in Conifer culminates in annual parade. Local chamber expands annual event into week-long series of festivities. By Jane Reuter. For Conifer native Yvonne Ludwig, the holidays are incomplete without the Conifer Christmas Parade. This year's 2 p.m. December 6th parade will be the 42nd annual. I've attended all but two of the parades since they started, she said. It's a yearly tradition I dearly love because it brings the community together. The annual parade features floats, walking groups, local marching bands, and festively decorated vehicles winding through Aspen Park along Sutton Avenue. Jean Sandberg, one of the parade's original founders, will be the 2025 Grand Marshal. The parade is the culmination of the Conifer Chamber's Christmas in Conifer celebration, which this year will be a week-long festival with a holiday lighting decorating contest, open houses, workshops, live music, kids' activities, shopping promotions, tasting events, and more. Ludwig is now a parade observer, but has also ridden floats with the Salvation Army in Pleasant Park Grange and served as the event's Grand Marshal in 2018. She now volunteers with the Conifer Area Chamber of Commerce on Parade Day, helping check ID cards and attaching wristbands for those who want to purchase alcohol. Not only is she a rarity for having seen 40 of the parades, she's also among the very few Conifer natives. Ludwig grew up there, moved away briefly, and moved back in 1974. She hasn't left since. My great-grandparents moved here in 1913. We just have a lot of history and roots here. The holiday event is a chance to reconnect with her fellow citizens. You get to see all your neighbors and friends either watching the parade or on floats, Ludwig said. It's just a wonderful community day. I also love the Elevation celebration for the same reasons. Ludwig said the pandemic halted the annual tradition for 1 year. Another year, a visiting friend wanted to instead to go to Georgetown's holiday event. I did not enjoy Georgetown because I wanted to be here in Conifer with my friend, she said. Ludwig is happy the chamber has expanded the event into a week of celebration, but for her, it's all window dressing for the real thing. I'm really old-fashioned, she said. To me, I just want the parade. A week of celebration. The Christmas in Conifer celebration kicks off with Small Business Saturday, November 29th, building momentum through a series of special events that include holiday happenings and Light Up Conifer. We're taking our holiday celebration to the next level with a week-long event that involves the entire community, said Conifer Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Beth Schneider. Christmas in Conifer Week includes holiday happenings from November 29th to December 6th. Businesses and organizations will host open houses, workshops, live music, kids' activities, shopping promotions, tasting events, and more. That week also includes Light Up Conifer, a holiday lighting contest for homes and businesses. Residents can participate in the home holiday decorating competition. Businesses and organizations can join in the window decorating competition for the building lighting competition. Residents and visitors who just want to check out the amazing displays can follow the lighting map on the Light Up Conifer page. For full details about Christmas and Conifer events and participation opportunities, call the Chamber office at 303-838-5711. And this article is accompanied by a photo with the following caption. Conifer's 42nd annual Christmas parade kicks off at 2 p.m. December 6th, the culmination of a week of holiday-themed fun in the community. And this is a picture of a float with kids in it. It looks like it's wrapped in holiday paper, red and white striped, with some large... they look like peppermint candies in the wrappers. And the kids, one kid is wearing a Santa hat. The other one is looking at the camera and waving with a big smile on her face. And there are some red and white wrapped spires coming from the float. There are also several other children and other people that you can see in the background, but I can't really see them to describe them. There are mountains in the background, and it looks like kind of a semi-overcast, semi-clear day, and everybody's wearing a warm coat. The next image, it looks like the same float with more children laughing, smiling at the camera. A couple have on Santa hats. And the next image is a picture from the view of within the parade. And it's looking, going with all of the parade marchers' backs toward the camera. And there are several people with red and black capes with some purple capes, and they're all marching in a line, and there are people along the side of the road, and they have hats on, Santa hats on. There is a mountain on the left and a field on the left. There are a couple of erected tents, on the left and the right of the street. And there is a float. I can't quite tell what it is, but it's red and white and yellow. And it's looks like it's being driven down the street in front of the people, the girls. It looks like girls and boys who are walking down the street with the red capes and the purple capes and the black capes. The next image is more photos of the girls and the boys in red and purple capes with several of the tents in the background. Jeffco superintendent sees progress amid budget crisis. In evaluation, Dorland touts literacy gains amid pay gap, trust challenges. By Susie Glassman. Jefferson County Public Schools Superintendent Tracy Dorland described the past year as one in which Jeffco made measurable progress on every goal, even as the district faces a $60 million budget shortfall, and she sought to renegotiate her $300,770 salary 3 years before her contract expires. In her annual self-evaluation presented to the Board of Education on Thursday night, Dorland highlights a 23% point jump in K-3 literacy scores, while acknowledging that the district is confronting one of the most difficult and consequential periods in recent memory. That period includes a symbolic but significant vote of no confidence from teachers last spring and the September shooting at the Evergreen High School. The evaluation documents reveal a contrast. While Dorland initiated contract renegotiations in August of 2024, despite having 3 years remaining on her current deal, 40% of Jeffco educators live paycheck to paycheck on average salaries of $71,972, according to the teachers' union. The board has not scheduled a vote on her contract request. Board divided over trust accountability. The board's discussion Thursday night exposed a sharp divide over how to hold Dorlan accountable for rebuilding trust with teachers. Board member Danielle Varda stood alone in opposing the evaluation, frustrated that for three consecutive years the board had discussed measuring trust but failed to formalize it as an evaluation metric. So I will vote no on this because we aren't done, Varda said. For the third year in a row, we have discussed in the evaluation a measurement around trust, but it remains unenforceable because the board hasn't formally incorporated it into policy. Without formal metrics, Varda argued, the board cannot hold Dorlan accountable for rebuilding relationships with teachers who voted no confidence in her leadership last spring. Other board members disagreed. Board member Aaron Kenworthy called the evaluation fair and thorough, while Varda's colleague suggested that trust is earned, it's not gained through measurement. We have to do the work and then trust follows. I worry that next year you all get to the evaluation and you hear once again, it's not formalized so we can't evaluate on it, Varda warned, noting she won't be on the board to push the issue forward. The evaluation passed 4-1, with Board President Mary Parker saying she pulled it from the consent agenda for transparency to make it more visible for people who wanted to find it. Academic gains amid organizational strain. Dorlan's evaluation reports nearly 3,900 more K-3 students now read at or above grade level compared to last year, based on Dibble's 8 assessment results. MAP reading scores increased by 2 percentage points across grades 1 to 10, while MAP math achievement rose by 3 percentage points for grades 3 to 10. These steady gains in literacy and math are particularly encouraging as we continue to focus on improving student outcomes, Dorlan wrote. Yet middle school performance remains stagnant. The evaluation acknowledges that achievement gains are not yet reflected in middle grades, which Dorlan identified as an area that remains critical to sustaining and accelerating growth over time. Deep financial and trust challenges. The district's financial challenges run deep. Dorlan's evaluation confirms implementation of a budget reduction blueprint to address the $60 million structural gap, with specific cuts to be determined for the 26-27 school year. Maintaining our hard-earned academic momentum is one of our highest priorities, she said. Our strategy is not about making indiscriminate cuts, but instead conducting a strategic, student-centered prioritization to maintain extraordinary student experiences in every classroom. The district plans to ask voters for a mill levy override in 2026. Meanwhile, Jeffco teachers received only a 1.5% raise this year, among the lowest in the metro area. The district recently finalized a 3-year agreement with the Jefferson County Support Professionals Association that ties future compensation to increases in new general fund revenue, effectively locking in current pay disparities. In her evaluation, Dorlan acknowledged the no-confidence vote, underscored the magnitude of change Jeffco has undergone, and the toll sustained transformation can take on relationships. This board is not currently discussing her contract request, according to the district. Pattern of disconnect. Dorlan, in her 5th year as superintendent, the longest tenure at the post in more than a decade, identifies culture and trust as a priority for 2025-2026. She writes that building trust is not a single initiative. It is a continuous practice. The evaluation revealed Dorlan has engaged in more than 30 one-on-one conversations with educators since the beginning of the school year. Teachers in these conversations express concern about workload and the need for help finding ways to make their important jobs more manageable, according to the evaluation. When asked for specific steps to rebuild trust beyond these conversations, the district referred to Dorland's self-evaluation document. When discussing her contract earlier this year, a district spokesperson stated that Dorland's primary motivation is to ensure leadership stability within Jeffco Public Schools, arguing that the community needs and deserves the continuity and stability that an extended contract term would provide. Yet the evaluation also showed Dorland acknowledging that building trust across an organization is a shared responsibility that cannot be achieved through statements alone, but through consistent actions over time. Competing priorities ahead. The September tragedy at Evergreen High School added urgency to safety concerns. Dorland noted that the incident profoundly affected our community and will shape our continued focus on psychological and physical safety. Three new board members were elected last month, joining two incumbents and potentially shifting governance dynamics as the district navigates these challenges. The district must balance maintaining academic progress while implementing significant budget reductions and addressing the compensation gap that leaves it struggling to compete for teachers with neighboring districts. Dorland acknowledged these tensions in her evaluation, writing that the coming year requires compassion, especially as we make hard budget decisions that affect people we value deeply. She emphasized that progress will depend not on the number of new initiatives launched, but our collective ability to stay aligned, stay disciplined, and stay focused on what matters most. And this article is accompanied by a picture with caption of Dorland, and this is a headshot of Dorland, Tracy Dorland, looking at the camera, smiling. She's a white woman, blonde hair, blue eyes. She has on a blue sleeveless top, a necklace, and she has her hair is long and a little bit wavy. And she has it down, and you can see the background is blurred. From the Jeffco transcript, Mount Air Christian Church brings community together. Church offers warm breakfast, clothes, and food to take home every Tuesday by Lillian Fuglay. Each Tuesday, Mount Air Christian Church is bustling. Volunteers line up at the fence, bringing breakfast, clothes, and other food to visitors so that as they chat and catch up in the church's parking lot. Inside, volunteers are hard at work, processing donations, getting bags together for visitors, and cooking up a hot breakfast. It's a crowd years in the making. While the church's food bank can trace its roots back to the 1970s with various food assistance programs in place since then, Ellen Rooker took the reins over 9 years ago and has built up the program since. After moving to Colorado and retiring, Rooker heard that there wasn't anyone taking care of the church food pantry. Without working full-time, she had a little time to spare, which Rooker decided to use keeping the pantry up and running. During Rooker's tenure, the food pantry has evolved. What was once a pantry that people could walk into has turned into an ordering system where visitors fill out sheets with everything they need and volunteers bring the food to them. The change was initially a way to stay up and running during the pandemic, which Rooker said only closed the food pantry for a week. After the pandemic began, Rooker and her volunteers began running the food pantry at the church's fence near the church parking lot. Each Tuesday, they set up tables full of hot breakfast and some grab-and-go items. The volunteers also have sheets to note what food and clothing item visitors need. Once they are filled out, volunteers take the sheets into the church, grabbing all of the items visitors need and bringing them back out to the fence to give to people. As some volunteers take the orders and fill them, even more volunteers work inside, processing the donations provided to the church. Other volunteers make breakfast and coffee for visitors, making sure they have something to eat as they wait for their food. People used to come inside and they could take one thing from each shelf, Rooker said. Now we have it typed up. We read it to them, and they make choices, and we fill out their form. Then our runners run the paper order back to the back and the two different rooms, and other volunteers fill the orders, and the runners run them back out. For Rucker, the food pantry wouldn't be possible without her volunteers. When she initially took over the operation, she only had a few volunteers. Now she has 19 to help her every Tuesday. "It's a team," Rucker said. "It's not me. It's a team. They're a great group of people. They're fabulous people. Not everyone who volunteers is a member of the church. We have people who are not members of the church who just heard of us or heard us hearing of us through friends. So it's a wonderful team. However, as the volunteer team has grown, so have the community's needs." Rucker said that the food pantry used to average 20 visitors weekly. Now they see over 70 visitors weekly. In 2022, the pantry served 1,521 people. So far in 2025, the pantry has served 3,482 people, over double the number of visitors the food pantry saw in 2022. "The need has really grown," Rucker said. "The food pantry is open each Tuesday from 9:30 a.m. to noon. On days the food pantry isn't open, visitors can still stop by the church's office for a free snack lunch." Rucker said they've seen an increase in giving out lunches, too. In January, the church gave out 8 sack lunches, but in September, they gave out 116. The pantry isn't just food. They also have hygiene items and clothing for visitors. While the church gets clothing donations from others as well, Rucker said the majority of their donations come from their clothing angel, a woman who drives down from Evergreen each week with a car full of clothes for the church's pantry. The church has a room full of clothes with as many options as possible to try to meet every visitor's needs. While the Mount Air Christian Church hosts the food pantry, it's funded by donations, not by the church budget. The food pantry takes donations of food and clothing as well as financial donations. "Anything that I do is strictly donations," Rucker said. "I need donations. I get financial donations from just people at the church, word of mouth, people who used to go there. I even get memorial gifts. People who pass their family will give it. To the pantry. In addition to the individual donations, Rucker works with several stores and restaurants, getting food donations to serve to visitors. She picks up pastries and bagels and breakfast sandwiches from restaurants throughout the week to serve as breakfast each Tuesday, ensuring visitors get a bite to eat as they get their food. Rucker said that many of the food pantry's visitors are there each week, helping them build relationships between volunteers and visitors. "We have relationships with them," Rucker said. "We know their names. Unless it's somebody new, we know their names." For Rucker, the food pantry is a way to give back, helping the people who need it. "I feel like we're here to help people," Rucker said. "My motto is, together we are the incarnate hands and feet and body of God of Christ. And this is just what we're meant to do. We're meant to help people, and that's what we're here for." And this article is included with a caption: "Each Tuesday, Mount Air Christian Church hosts a food bank, giving their community a place to get a hot breakfast, food, and clothes." And this is a picture of a man reaching up on a shelf of food items, packaged food items. He has on a t-shirt, and I can't read what it says, except it does say food bank on it. And there are several different types of food items. Can't quite tell what they all are, but there's quite an array of different food items. Thank you for joining us for the Saturday, November 29th, 2025 reading of the Jefferson County Publications. My name is Donna Gill.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.